Good evening, everyone. This is Dolores Cannon with the Metaphysical Hour. And we have guests tonight. You know, the last few weeks we've been on, we haven't because we've been discussing our trips and everything and just talking, which we are very good at just talking. But we have two of our authors have just finished a new book. And this is one where we have co-authors. We have two authors, and they're both on the line together, and they're going to be talking about the new book. It's only been out, not even a month, I don't believe.
Right. Well, I think we got it out right at the 1st of September.
Yeah, it's a brand new book, and I think it should be an interesting topic that people would be interested in. But if anyone wants to call in, I'm going to give out the toll-free number if you want to call in and ask the authors questions. The toll-free number is 1-888-815-9756. 888-815-9756. And let's try to keep the calls to the topic that we're discussing. Now, the authors are Maureen Miguel and Nola Davis. And they're both at the same house on the speakerphone, so we'll be able to talk to both of them at the same time. The name of the book that they wrote is Live from the Other Side. And this is just like that title. It's going to be about what happens when people cross over. And I think we're going to let them tell their background and how they came to write this. But it's Live from the Other Side, talking about people after they die and what happens. Okay, and Julia, I think, has got an interesting part in this because Nola Davis was a health care provider for many years. And we'll let her do it. But Julia was an intensive care nurse for 20 years, so she's been around people who have died also.
Right.
Okay.
We just need to compare some notes here.
Yeah, that's what we're going to do. See what we have come out here with. Okay, well, who wants to begin first on that side?
I'll begin.
Maureen, okay. But we want to know how you came to
Nola.
Write this. Tell us about your background.
It's Nola. So how do you know which one it is?
I don't. I just know
exactly.
One's a little something. We don't have any red flags to tell us who's speaking. Okay.
This is Nola for the audience. My background is I've been in healthcare since 1978, and in particular in the field of senior healthcare. And over the time, I took a deep interest in the end-of-death process and also linking up with one of my intuitive gifts that I have. And through that process, I was able to spend time with family members as they had family members who were transitioning, and also spending time with some of them after their family members had transitioned. And it was through that it was really born innately within me that this wonderful thread of love that we have for each other is almost, to me, it's divine, it's universal. And never are we disconnected from those that we love, that they are always with us, no matter where they are in the universe. So that is my background.
Okay. All right, Maureen, tell us about your background.
So my background is I'm an associate professor at Pacific Lutheran University here in Tacoma, Washington. And for many years, I teach dance, and I direct a dance ensemble, but I've always felt that the awareness extends beyond the body. And in the last 10 years, I've been also teaching a course in healing arts, which explores the intuition in the course. I've also had a real interest in the tarot cards for the symbology. So my work evolved in this area of intuition, and the idea came up for a sabbatical project that I might collect some stories from some of my clients who I've been seeing who have asked me about messages from the other side, from their loved ones. And that's how the project came about. And Nola offered to come on board with me in the project and to offer her expertise. And that's where it began.
Okay. I'm interested to know, how did the two of you get together in the beginning?
Well, we ended up... in the early 90s, I actually started studying Healing Touch with Healing Touch International and utilized the basement of the facility where I worked in the evening to be the clinical practicum site for those individuals in the Tacoma area that wanted to practice the Healing Touch modalities we had been taught. That introduction actually occurred at one of the local hospitals. And my desire was to integrate Healing Touch into the hospice aspects of care. And so that is where I met Maureen, was during the practicum sessions.
So she was in the session with you, or?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, that's cool.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so we became friends, and it was a wonderful group that met together twice a month and practiced Healing Touch, and then friendships began, and we've been friends ever since, so it's been over 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you just begin collecting stories out of curiosity, or what?
That's exactly what we did. We just began collecting stories. It seemed that as soon as we set the intention for the book, one story after the next just came to us. They came to me in my intuition work that I do with the tarot cards. People were asking me for messages from their loved ones with the tarot cards, and then in the meantime, they were telling me stories that they received messages. It might be a dream that they had, or they might smell the fragrance of their loved one, or they might hear their favorite radio song on the radio that they knew that this was their loved one coming through. And then that's when I got the idea, I need to write about this. So then we came on board with the
book. That's the way the universe works. You put out the intention of what it is you want, and then, yes, everything starts pouring in. And the first thing you know, you've got way too much material.
And, you know, the stories just haven't stopped coming in since we presented the book. We presented the book at the International Association of Near-Death Studies there in Denver. And when we presented the book at the end of our session, we must have had at least six stories that came to us immediately in the session of people in the groups, men and women, who shared their stories about messages they received from their loved ones.
Uh-huh.
Cool. So that might be a book, too. Huh?
Okay. Well, that shows what I've always believed is that everyone has a story to tell as metaphysical or has to do with psychic phenomena, but they're always afraid to tell anyone because they're thinking they're going to think they're crazy. But once you start bringing these things up, they'll say, well, you know, there was a strange incident that happened. I just don't like to talk about it. So it's a lot more common than people think it is.
I think one of the most important aspects for myself personally for the book was having worked in healthcare and now being CEO of a healthcare corporation. And we know people have stories and have had experiences. And when they were able to share that experience with someone, especially when it has been about their own family member that passed that they loved, and then they had a visit from that person, there is a relief for them and a release for them. And it's like they truly know that person is okay. And in watching people, it's like a burden is lifted off of them when they can share their stories. And it is my ultimate goal for the book, for it to allow doors to open for people to share their stories to each other and with each other.
Because otherwise they're afraid, do they just hold them inside? Have you been noticing a pattern in these stories of people seeing the same things or having the same type of experiences?
We do. The experiences they have with electronics in particular, with radios, radio stations coming on that have a particular station or a particular song that person who had crossed over was important to them when they were alive, lights, turning on and off, flickering, TV sets, resetting to the same channel that their loved one watched, telephones ringing on anniversary dates and birthdays and nobody being on the other end of the line, cell phones ringing, showing the deceased person's cell phone number that's been disconnected for months.
Wow.
Well, I think I've found that maybe it's easier for the spirits to interact with electronics and energy devices like that, something to do with the electrical energy.
Well, yeah.
They
they're
can affect
a pure
it.
Form of energy. So.
Yeah, because
absolutely.
Their energy also.
And then the other thing has been people actually sensing, feeling, or actually seeing the person that they loved that passed with them. And just the other day, I was in one of my buildings, and one of my managers had taken the book that we wrote and just laid it on the table in the key staff room. And two of the key staff came up to me, and one in particular said, I just never knew that you had an interest in this type of thing, but I would so like to have an opportunity to talk to you. And so I set some time aside and met with her. And she proceeded to speak about the visits she had had from her son after he passed.
Mm-hmm. That's what I mean. They're afraid to tell anyone.
They are. And she said, you know, I don't want people to think I'm crazy. And, you know, when people say, don't you think that's crazy? I don't think it's crazy at all. We live in a world now where if we look at how the media has adjusted itself, I couldn't imagine 20 years ago Harry Potter being successful. I couldn't imagine 20 years ago the shows that we see on TV now that really have started to edge and tiptoe into life after death.
And they keep increasing. Have you not, like this season alone, I mean, they are more than doubling the number of shows along that line.
There's even a mainstream movie that's coming out here in the next few weeks that deals with the afterlife. So it's happening.
Yeah,
you know?
What's the name of it? I know I saw something about it.
I think it's called Afterlife. I believe that's the name of it.
Okay. Uh-huh. Yeah, there's a lot. And it's taking it seriously. It's not all the where they, you know, before they just, you know, have to make it horror and all these things. These are actually doing something sane with it.
Yeah, because they used to make it weird and strange and they would have to bring in all of those aspects. But this is real, and that's they're finally getting around to that. That's good.
We really feel that demystifies death, you know, just like these films are demystifying death now. It's becoming mainstream that people are aware. Just getting past that point of not thinking that they're crazy to tell their story to the next person, you know.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, it's something everybody has to go through, and there is a fear of death, and they think there's not anything beyond it. They have all kinds of beliefs. But in my work, you know, we're doing this for 40 years, and I've written several books on what happens when you die and where you go on the other side. In the beginning, nobody was accepting it.
Mm-hmm.
But now when I give lectures, they all understand it, so and they're ready for more information. That's why we're calling it the awakening.
Mm-hmm.
The veil is thinning to where we are letting more information come in.
Well, and I
we're
do believe
open.
That there is,
you know,
a thin veil between the world.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's what we mean. The veil is thinning to where it's not hidden as much as it used to be. And people are freer to talk about it.
Right. We're more open. And like this book, see, it gives people the opportunity to, one, give themselves permission to be open to it, and then by being open, then they're allowing. So, you know, and then even more things will keep coming. So,
yeah, once they start saying, oh, it's not happening, it couldn't be, and become more open to it, then you'll have more experiences that are stranger.
Mm-hmm.
But
and I love when these experiences come through and there's so much humor. You know, there's humor sometimes that the other side brings to us. And I can give you an example of a quick story.
Yeah.
There definitely is.
You say you want to give an example?
Yeah. One example would be an engineer that I met, and he's very right-brained, and everything is concrete in his world. And he's off on a building project in eastern Washington, and we live in the northwest here in the western Washington. He's off on a building project. He's there at his brother's home, and he's staying at his brother's home. His mom had died just a few months previous to that, and his mother was a chain smoker. Now, he was staying at his brother's house, and there wasn't any smokers in the house. And he was up in the morning, and he was taking a shower. And he was in the shower, of course, in the buff, he tells me, and he said, I smelled cigarette smoke. And he looked around. He goes, I don't know. The window wasn't open. There wasn't any smoke coming in anywhere. And he knew that there wasn't any smokers in the house. He turned his head in the shower, and there was his mother sitting at the edge of the tub in her special red event dress, puffing away. And here he is in the buff, you know, and he goes, oh, hi, Mom. And she says, hi. And he goes, how are you? And she said, I'm fine. And he goes, oh, my gosh, I jumped out of the tub. He goes, I was so happy. I turned again, but then she was gone. And he said, I just knew Mom was okay. And I went down to tell my brother. You know, I couldn't wait to tell my brother. And my brother looked at me and said, well, did she like my new house? He didn't quite know what to say. But anyway, he was so happy, you know, that, you know, he had this message from his mom. And here she came, right, with her cigarette and everything.
You got verification right there.
Right.
I know in the book, you say, talk about some people who, when their someone dies, they keep saying, give me a sign, give me a sign. But then when it comes, they don't even recognize it.
Well, some and I think sometimes people try to push it too far and aren't open to it can be a sign. It can be a flip that lamp flickering on and off.
Right. Or maybe they have expectations of what a sign should be.
Yeah. Because sometimes it's not something dramatic and earth-shaking. It can be something very subtle and simple, that, like the smoke.
Well, it's not, or like the songs. Even that may take a few times to register. Oh, wait a minute. That was their song, you know, so, you know, on the radio.
Yeah, it's like they're expecting something dramatic, like somebody to appear sitting on the end of a tub.
Right. That's what they think. Oh, that will be my sign, but
most of the time it's not. They do something very subtle. One person I know said they smelled roses in the house, or they smelled pipes smoke, and something would be moved or something. But sometimes they'll say, well, it was my imagination, because it's so small it could be easily overlooked. And you found that, haven't you?
I have, and in particular, I had a staff member the other day share with me that when her father died, it was on the anniversary of his death, and she was in the kitchen with her mother, and they were talking, and in particular, she was talking about her dad, when they heard a noise in the living room. Now, her dad always sat on the right-hand side of the mantle, and they went in to see what the noise in the room was, and the picture had moved from the right-hand side to the left side.
Oh. So it wasn't just a, I mean, the picture moved all the way over?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's not subtle.
No, that's not, because if something was moved and you weren't in the room, you might have an logical explanation for it. You know, well, I must have moved it and forgot about it. But if you,
well, even if they didn't, I mean, it was hanging over here, and even if they walked in and it was over there, and you knew you didn't move it,
yeah, something like that would be be more than subtle.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be a message.
Well, one pattern that I've noticed in my work is when the people are, you know, dying, is they often see deceased relatives or friends come. You know, of course, the people in the room can't see them, but the person who is dying can see them, usually around the room, around the bed or something. And, of course, the doctors and nurses always say, oh, no, that's just the brain is, it's being deprived of oxygen, or they're on drugs, and that's what's causing them to hallucinate. But I've heard it again and again from nurses and doctors both, that it's as a recurring event, that they do see beings in the room that they recognize. Have you, and you've had that in some of the stories, haven't you?
We have, and this story is not in the book, but it actually happened when I was running a facility. We had a fairly large hospice unit, and one morning the nurses came running down the hallway to get me. And they said, you've got to come quick. She's hysterical. We've never seen anything like this in our lives. And so I went down the hallway, and this woman was coming out of her mother's room. Her mother had just passed, and she was laughing. and had this wonderful expression on her face. And I walked up to her, and I said, how are you? And she goes, I'm wonderful. Right before my mother died, I saw my father come in the room and take my mother's hand. And my mother got up from the bed and walked out the door with my dad.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
And I know that my mom is with my dad again. And even though my mom has crossed today, I know where she is and I know who she's with and who could want for anything more.
Absolutely. How beautiful.
Yeah. So, you know, it's typical in enough hospice work that I've seen when people start pointing up and around their bed and asking me, do you see them? I often will say, tell me who they are because I don't know their names.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very interesting. They will give the names of those who were a part of their family that they loved.
Mm-hmm.
And I do believe that people on the other side do come to help us journey home.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, that's what I've written about, is you're never, ever alone when this happens. There's always someone who will come to be with you and take you to show you where to go. It can be a deceased relative or friend, or you have your guides and guardian angels also, but there's always somebody who will take them. And a lot of people are so afraid when they die that they're going to be all by themselves, and it's a frightening thing.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what I found in my work. There's always someone to help them as they leave the body and cross over. Okay. What? Well, I was waiting for something there to pick up on it or something, I guess.
You know, I can speak from my own experience. When my father was dying, one of the promises I had made to my dad was that he would not die alone because he was tremendously fearful of that.
Uh-huh.
And so typical of people who do not want us to be present when they pass, and often that can be the relationship they had with us, that within themselves they feel that that's too painful for us to watch. Sometimes they will literally wear us out to the point that we actually have to sleep or mm-hmm. go get a meal or take a break. And so on the morning that he passed away, I had gone to bed that night and said I would see him in the morning. And I had a dream. In my dream, my dad and I were walking side by side. And we got to a point where I could see the most incredible light I've ever seen. And I could see people in the light moving forward to the edge of the light and could make them out. One was my brother, one was my dad's two brothers had passed, his dad and mom. And I remember turning to my dad and saying, you know, it's not my time, I cannot go. That I'll stay uh-huh. here with you until you're ready. At some point, I remember waking up just very, very abruptly, the phone rang, and my dad had just passed.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's very mm-hmm. real. That was a very real dream. It wasn't mm-hmm. a dream. It was an experience that you actually had.
Mm-hmm. And so one of the things I tell people is sometimes because of the relationship we have with those that we love, they will not die in front of us. But we
yes.
can through setting our intention to be with them and that they're
mm-hmm.
not alone, that we can have extraordinary experiences and great comfort from what we experience.
Right.
That was something I was going to bring up, is that a lot of times they'll wait till everyone leaves the room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've had that happen in our own family, too. It's like they wait till everybody's out and then they will die. Like they don't want to do it in front of the people. Another thing that happens, sometimes they're waiting for one last person to get there so they can say goodbye to them. They're just holding on that long and then they leave. So these are recurring patterns. And I was talking about patterns.
Uh-huh. We also have seen in hospice work where when a family member can't make it because of airlines and distance, I spent time with people saying, in particular, it was a hospice nurse who came to me one afternoon and had gotten news that her favorite uncle had taken a rapid turn for the worse, and they were expecting him not to make it through the day. And there was no way that she could get to L.A. in time. And she was frantic and really upset. And we spent some time together sitting, and I said, you know, whatever you believe in, Michelle, if you just sit and hold that space for him and send your love to him, even though he knows on a physical level you're not there. So Michelle did that, and of course her uncle passed away. And a couple weeks later, she came in and was talking to me, and she said, you know, my aunt said that my uncle looked up at her and said, you think I'm crazy, but Michelle's in the room with me.
Huh.
And she said she loves me, and I can go now.
Okay. So it works both ways.
It does.
Let's take that one step further. See, that's how remote healing is done right there, because the energy, you just think of the person. Like she said, you create that space, and energetically you are there. So, yes, she was actually there. They were both actually together in a space. That's how all of that works.
So that awareness truly goes beyond the physical body, you know. And sometimes we get caught up with the physical body and we want to smother our loved ones in the end. We all want to be close in the room. And like Nola said, it's best sometimes to just go and have that coffee break, go and have some food, and let your loved one rest so they can truly go to sleep without the... Sometimes there's guilt about leaving their loved ones. They don't want to, you know, be in front of them and have to leave them that way. And we truly believe that there's messengers on the other side to help them cross over, as you do too.
Yes, that's what I found. There's always someone. That's why they see these beings in the room. They're deceased husbands, wives, friends, and nobody else can see them. And they always die very happy when they see these beings.
Well, I was just going to say that. I didn't know if that was too personal to mention when Daddy crossed over.
Okay, well, she's talking about my husband and her father. Okay, go ahead.
And it was exactly that. Nola was talking about her father, and it was right. I was thinking about mentioning about my father, and then you brought up yours, and so it was like, okay, I guess we're supposed to do this.
Okay.
But it was that. It was all of a sudden, you could tell there were people around the bed to him, and he was just looking and smiling and laughing, and we knew that there were... We just kept wondering. At that point, he was...
He was
not able to talk to us, really, so we couldn't. But we were wondering, who is it? Who is it that's come, you know? But apparently there were a lot.
Because we would have liked to know who was there.
Right.
But also, before he was dying, when he was so sick in the hospital and he'd come home from time to time, he was affecting electronics.
Oh, yes. Oh, my goodness.
But we thought that was because he was trying to draw energy from the electronics. He was very much into computers, all kinds of electronics all his life, and he was drawing energy from anything to stay alive, really, even the car.
Something. Well, I know that's he got bad one night, and so I drove him over to the hospital. And we got in my car, and all of a sudden, all my electronics went out. And he's like, oh, a fuse must have gone out. And I'm just like, oh, this is crazy. Everything's just gone. I mean, I could still drive it, but it was
but
just...
All the dashboard
the
lights.
All the lights, everything went out. And so anyway, I got him over there. We got him settled in, and so he's still trying to tell me what to do to fix the problem. He's like, well, go check the fuses and go do this and go do that and everything. Well, when I went back out to the car, it came on. Everything worked fine. It was him.
It was like they're trying to get energy from somewhere to stay alive, and with him, he was drawing it from electronics.
Because that's what he knew in his life, and that's what he was close to. Isn't that interesting how that's where the energy is drawn from?
Absolutely, yeah. And, yeah, he never could wear watches. He never could wear, I mean, and my computer crashed while he was working on it. See, that it was just, it was all my stuff. What was that about?
Yeah, but he was wanting to do stuff up to the end, but everything he touched would just crash or wouldn't
right,
work.
Right. So, yeah, it is interesting. That is probably the energy he was very comfortable with.
And he knew that you had an abundance of energy, you know. You were creative.
Apparently. Maybe that's it, yeah.
It could be. Okay.
Because it was my stuff. Was it happening with anybody else?
I don't remember. I think it was mostly yours.
It was my stuff, yeah.
Okay.
Well, and he did visit me after he left, too, so.
But. So we believe in these things, but, you know, in my work, my profession, I hear lots of stories constantly, so we are definitely believers. But, you know, they say even with the atheists, there is no atheist on the deathbed. When it comes time to go, all of a sudden they start thinking maybe there is something out there.
When my boss passed away, he had Lou Gehrig's disease for 4 years before he passed, and one of his
Can you move in a little closer, Nola?
Yeah, your voice is really faint.
When one of my bosses passed away in 2007, he had suffered Gehrig's disease for 4 to 5 years, and one of his children that I knew had, when his father had gotten ill, said, "Well, you know, I'm an atheist, and I don't believe in anything." And he goes, "So maybe if something miraculous happens with Dad, it might make a believer out of me." And I smiled at him and said, "Well, that's an interesting intention to set for yourself." Well, it was interesting. A year before he died, his son was talking to me, and his son said, "You know, I really have to tell you, I absolutely believe that there is something divine in the universe." And he goes, "And I know it won't save my dad, but I absolutely believe, Nola, and I have no idea what has happened to me."
So he didn't have anything.
You know, maybe watching Dad go through what Dad has gone through made a believer out of me.
Okay.
Well, shortly after his dad died, he had a visit from his dad, as did all three other children. But his wife did not have a visit, so she ended up in my office about 3 or 4 months later and really was wound up tight. She had believed that she had failed her husband because she'd not been able to prevent the Lou Gehrigs from taking his life. She believed she had failed her religion because if she had not failed her religion, then her husband would still be alive. So we spent some time making a journey down those two roads of why she believed that way. And she said, "I don't know why he would visit them and not visit me." And I said, "Well, Patty, here's the deal. I've heard you say over and over since we've been talking that your husband is dead, that he's gone, and you're never going to see him again." And I said, "And then you tell me you want to see him again." I said, "Now, if I'm Ray sitting on the other side, and one day, one minute you're saying, I'm dead, I don't exist anymore, and then the other minute you tell me you want to see me, how confusing."
Make up your mind. Which is it?
You're going to send the message out. If you're going to call on the telephone to the other side, you need to be clear about the message you're sending out. So spend some time thinking about that, that it's so important that if you want a message from Ray, contact with Ray, just simply set that intention." So she did, and she did have her visit. And her visit is in the book, and she had a lovely visit from him, and a visit that was remarkable. And I tell people when they say, you know, "I really want a visit from my mom," or "I really want a visit from my dad," or "I really want a visit from Aunt Marge," that it's so important to be clear about your intention and what you want, and not to send a mixed message out to the universe.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Well, I think it's interesting what's happened in my family. I don't see them. I don't get signs. Maybe I could if I was more intuitive to it. So every time someone in my family has died, they come through one of my friends or somebody else because they can't get through to me. Because one of them was interesting, was a friend in New Zealand. And my sister had died, and she said she was driving her car in the city.
Yeah, the friend.
That friend was driving her car in New Zealand in the city. And all of a sudden, it was though my sister was in the car with her, not physically, but she was yelling and screaming at her. So she had to pull off on the side of the street or she was going to have a wreck. And my sister was telling her, she won't listen to me. I can't get through to her. Will you give her a message? She meant me. So sometimes we're not open like that, but I've had that happen with just about everyone in my family that's died. They can't get to me, but they get to one of my friends, and they deliver the message.
But, you know, sometimes I wonder if it's not that you're not open, but for them, maybe it's hard for them to come through you because they want so badly to be with you at next to your physical body, whereas they can easily come to your friend and that there's not the emotion or the tie. But if they come to you, they have that emotion as well, perhaps? That could possibly be.
Yeah, it could be.
It could be. But at least they give us the message.
Mm-hmm.
That's the key.
Yeah. Right.
You know, I wrote a poem in the book that I'd like to share if I could take a moment to do that.
Oh, go ahead, yeah.
It's called Side by Side. They walk down paths, alleys, and familiar places. We see them as real in youthful faces and strong bodies. Pain has dissolved, transparent to all we knew. Smiles and nods fill gaps of time eternal. Love holds ties forever, side by side.
Yeah.
So we truly believe they are just right with us.
Well, and they are.
Sure, that's beautiful.
Well, I've heard all you have to do is just think about them, and that immediately, you know, well, like I said, like the energy work earlier, if you just think of somebody, you're energetically with them. So it's no different. I mean, they're just, they're still there, you know. Just because they're not here physically on this part doesn't mean they're not here. And so you think of them, you know their energy. You just think of them, they're immediately there. You're with them. So...
Part about it is that when you can intuitively see people who have crossed, and what is amazing is when you see them and close to the time that they made their transition, they were encumbered by a disease, an age.
Mm-hmm.
And then
yeah.
When you see them, they, through what we know as Earth time, over a period of a year or two where you see them come and go and visit you, that their appearance changes to a real youthfulness.
Right, right.
And they're glowing and they're healthy again.
Mm.
And the emotions that they carried that troubled them in this life have been shed.
Mm-hmm.
And the wisdom they can impart to us is just incredible. Absolutely incredible. Because it comes from such a point of love and such a point of clarity and speaks so strongly. An example of that is my sister died in 2007, and she had engaged in a behavior that ultimately led to her own death, which... pretty much it really riveted my mother and upset all of us. But my mother had a dream, and in her dream, she saw Amy. And Amy came, and Amy apologized for the absence of wisdom in the decision she had made, and came to actually share an intimate conversation with my mother and to let her know that she was okay. And she wanted mom to be okay.
And
that was something never in her life, while she was alive, would have happened for her. So the visits are remarkable to see these people healed and whole again is just incredible.
Well, and that gives great closure also.
Right, and it gives us healing on this side as well. So
right.
Unfinished business can often be finished business after they pass over.
Yeah. Well, like you said, maybe it was something they just couldn't do on this side, so that's nice that they can do it. They go ahead and do it then.
But I was thinking, too, sometimes when people are dying, they're under so much medication and drugs, and they can't get the last messages through anyway because they're not there. Well, you saw that a lot in intensive care when you worked there.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So the only way they can give a message is after they have died and try to get it through.
Well, sometimes they can break through all that medication and everything, and they'll break through and give something right at the last, and then they're gone. You know, it's like they do that right, you know, or they'll, have you seen, it's like all of a sudden, sometimes they think they're getting better, and they have lucidness and everything, and then that's usually not a really good sign. A lot of times that means they're about to go, because that's that last bit of, it's like they break through, and
you try to tie up loose ends.
Right.
Yeah. I had that were in my facility, and he had cancer with brain mets, and his wife was in her early stages of Alzheimer's, but they were this darling couple, and he had actually been pretty much unconscious all day long, and we knew the end was within sight. And so we got his wife all ready for bed and dolled up, and she couldn't, the difficult part about it was throughout the day, she didn't know what was going on. So we had to keep reminding her what was going on. And so we took to him to say goodbye, and she went over and she kissed him on the forehead, and she goes, "Oh, Daddy, I love you." And he opened his eyes, and he said, "I love you too, my darling."
Now, mind you, he was incoherent for several days before that.
Right. And she went to bed. They shared a room. She went to bed, and within 45 minutes, he was gone.
Yeah.
So I do and believe even, they have those moments of clarity, which
absolutely.
Are important to be able to share with us.
Mm-hmm. And it seems to be that universal connection of love, you know, that is the thread that connects this world and the next.
Oh, yeah.
Well, love is the most powerful emotion there is. That's really what it's all about, is love.
Mm-hmm.
That's why there's nothing really to fear. It's just, it's a normal transition. It's a normal part of life to cross over. So there's nothing to fear with it. It is all love.
Mm-hmm.
Were you going to say something a few minutes ago?
I don't remember.
I don't remember what you were going to say.
No.
Oh, okay. But I think that's
the other
one
piece.
Thing.
Go ahead.
I do think the other piece is that as more of this becomes mainstream and main genre, that we really do, as parents, have an obligation with our children to allow our children to be part of these rites of passage and to share with them that this is a normal process of life and that those that we love, we never lose them. And my experience has been with children that they do so well with it, so well, and don't carry the fear and apprehension that we do.
Exactly, yeah.
Because look what the children are exposed to on television, in the movies. It's all that death is horrible and messy and bad and negative.
Well, or it's not real.
Yeah, yeah, the actor's going to get up.
Right.
But if that's all
but
they know.
But the younger kids, they if they can see it within its true context and everything, no, they accept it beautifully.
Yeah,
they,
but I mean, if all they are exposed to is what's on television, it's in the movies, it's not going to present a true picture. So I think it is good if they could be there when someone they loved was passing over, but some hospitals don't allow the kids to be there, do they?
I don't know now. I haven't been in them in a long time, so... I don't know.
Maybe the rules have changed.
What are the rules, Nola?
Well, I work in skilled nursing facilities, and we always set it up for our clients that death is as important as birth. Mm-hmm. And that we gather to celebrate that life and hold that life while it moves forward on its journey. And little ones of all ages are welcome to be there. And so we set up a special room for the family, and they can take turns coming in and out. And it seems to work very, very well. And in ICU, of course, you're limited because they only allow a certain number of people in.
Yeah. Right, usually two.
You know, I haven't seen what they do on med-surg because my experience has been typically on med-surg, they're not expecting someone to go. Unless someone
When you start saying that, I remembered, see, back in... in ICU, we only allowed two in at a time, but usually they would rotate so that they could all get in to see them. But out on the floor, in the med-surg units and everything, I remember some, how do I say this without being politically correct, some ethnics,
some cultures,
the entire family was there to be there and when they passed. I mean, the room was full of people. Children, everything, like I said, and it was just this whole, they had their
ritual,
own way of
really.
Doing it. So.
Well, there's some cultures, we lived in the Philippines, that when if somebody's sick and in the hospital just for an operation or just sick, the whole family comes in and they sleep on the floor around the bed and everything.
Right.
So they're not used to leaving the person by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So some cultures have those beliefs and they serve the purpose.
Well, it's whatever they're used to. So.
Yeah, but of course it gets in the way of the doctors and the nurses.
Oh, it can be very crowded. It's hard to get to them.
Okay.
I think the most interesting cultural experience I ever had was we had a Native American who was towards the end of his chronic terminal disease. And he called us to the room one day, and he brought out this blanket. And he said, in the days to come, I want this blanket on me. And he goes, and you have to promise that when I pass, you will not allow this blanket to be laundered. And I said, well, can you tell me the symbology that has for you? And he says, because this blanket is the blanket of my family, and it has held every family member's soul as they have traveled to spirit. And he says, so please, do not wash my blanket. My family will come for my blanket when I no longer need it.
Uh-huh. And then, very important symbolism.
Absolutely. Did he pass by himself?
So his family came, and they spent several days, and pretty soon the room was very filled, but it was a wonderful transition for him.
Well, we'd like our audience to know that they can tell us their stories on our website, and our website is www.livefromtheothersideside.com.
Yeah, I was going to ask in a few minutes how they could contact you.
That's great.
The name of the book is Live from the Other Side. So that's the website now.
Absolutely.
Livefromtheotherside.com. And you would appreciate having these stories sent to you, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. We've been doing radio shows, and people have been calling in with their stories. So we encourage people to come to our website and tell us their story.
Okay, because this show tonight goes all over the world, so you start telling what you're going to get from it. A lot of people say they don't want to call in because they just want to listen. They don't like to interrupt it.
And then the archives are available forever. So.
Oh, yeah. All the old shows are on the archives, and they can always download them anytime they want. But the name of the book is Live from the Other Side, and I think it's very important to let people know they're not alone with these experiences. They think something strange and weird is happening they can't talk about. It's much more common than you think, and it shows there is a common thread going through all of this, that death is not to be feared. It is a natural process. And that's what I think. It's a beautiful book with the
story. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And both of you are beautiful, too, with the energy you give out working with these people.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I feel it's a real privilege to be able to work and help people and to be able to help people walk through just another segment of life and to realize that the veil lifts and we're always together no matter where we are.
And it's been an honor for us. It's been an honor for us that you recognized our book and will bring our book out into the world. So we appreciate that, and it's been wonderful to speak with both of you tonight.
Okay. But the book is available. You want to call our website. It's www.ozarkmountain. The name of our company is Ozark Mountain Publishing, but it's abbreviated on the website. It's OZARKMT.com. Or if you're overseas, it's OZARKMT.com. Or you can call the 800 number, 1-800-935-0045. But if you want to contact Maureen and Nola direct, theirs is www.livefromtheotherside.com. And they said they'll be most excited, and you're most welcome to call in and share your stories.
Mm-hmm. And ask questions.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Ask any questions of anything that's bothering you. I had an email the other day that shows they're out there, the skeptics and the atheists, mm-hmm. and he was very adamant in the email. No one knows what happens when you cross over. There's nothing there. I know there's nothing there. And I felt so sorry for the man that he was so adamant about that. But then it goes back to, they say, there's no atheists on the deathbed.
Well, but we're all on our path of discovery, so he's just on his path. That's
yeah, this
where
is what he believes mm-hmm. right now, that something will probably happen that will change his way of thinking. Or if that's his way of thinking, there's nothing wrong
with it. Exactly, it works for him, so.
Okay. All right, well, we're coming down to the top of the hour now. And I want to thank you, Maureen and Nola, for being on the show tonight.
Thank
and
you.
And telling your story. Okay.
Thank
and
you
I
very
want
much.
To thank,
you're very welcome.
Okay, and I want to thank everyone for tuning in tonight and listening to the story. Thanks, everybody, and we'll see you again next week. Good night, everyone.
Good night.